Welcome to the number one show and the source of truth for all things medtech. Here, we reveal the secrets and stories behind the investments, science, and commercialization of the medtech industry. Every week, we'll take you on a wild ride with the biggest names in the game, from entrepreneurs and investors who are shaking up the market to healthcare providers who are revolutionizing the way we think and practice medicine. So hold on tight and get ready for a journey like no other. This is the State of MedTech. Hey everybody, welcome back to the show, and this one's an exciting one because it kicks off a series of episodes I've been wanting to do, which is around startups doing equity crowdfunding. I'll cover that in a moment. Many of you already know about that from things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, where essentially there are products that, let's say, have been prototyped or even have a small commercial launch, and they essentially raise money from the crowd, right? From non-accredited investors who will put money in to get access to the product early on or equity or something. And so, you know, this is the first one we're doing. And so let me explain to you a little bit about what crowdfunding is and isn't. And then we're going to get into an introduction on our company that we're highlighting today, along with the innovator. So Regulation CF, equity crowdfunding, what is it? Well, simply put, it's a game-changing financial innovation that's pretty much making it easier for entrepreneurs to raise capital and for everyday investors like you and I to support their favorite startups. So Regulation CF equity crowdfunding is a result of the Jumpstart Our Business Startups, or JOBS Act, which was signed into law by President Obama back in 2012. What you may not know is that that was actually originally designed for startups are doing social good, especially healthcare startups, but healthcare really didn't get into it until, I'd say, maybe the last 5 years. The legislation essentially aimed to make it simpler for small companies to raise funds by allowing them to issue securities through crowdfunding platforms. Regulation CF, again, stands for Regulation Crowdfunding, is a section of the Job Act that governs this process. So how does it work? Well, first, a startup looking to raise capital can create a campaign on an SEC-registered crowdfunding platform. And the one that we're doing today with the startup, they used Start Engine, which I believe Kevin O'Leary, the Mr. Wonderful, the shark from, you know, the shark Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank had invested in. So these platforms essentially act as intermediaries between the companies and investors. They perform due diligence on the business and ensure that they follow all the rules set in place by the SEC. So Regulation CF allows companies to raise up to $5 million in a 12-month period. And investors, on the other hand, have certain limitations on the amount they can invest based on their income and net worth. So this is to ensure that investors don't risk more than they can afford to lose. The benefit about that is that, you know, people who are everyday people who want to maybe invest $500, $1,000, $5,000 in a startup can do it. You don't have to have millions of dollars to do so, which is, in my opinion, I think is great. So equity crowdfunding under the Regulation CF is really a win-win for both entrepreneurs and investors. Entrepreneurs get access to a wider pool of potential investors, and investors get an opportunity to invest in early stage startups, which was previously just restricted to accredited investors with lots of money only, right? So it's important to note that investing in startups, this carries a high level of risk, okay? I've personally invested in some startups. Some have done well and others have not, right? And I accept that risk. But, you know, it can yield really high returns if the company becomes successful. So as with any investment, potential investors should be very careful in evaluating the risks and potential rewards before participating in the equity crowdfunding. So that's kind of a brief overview. And before we jump into introducing the company, I have to say this one last thing, of course, but I want to remind everybody that the information that you're about to listen to on the podcast is for general information and educational purposes only. And I'd also say entertainment purposes, of course. It's not intended to be and should not be considered financial investment, legal or tax advice. Investing in early stage companies carries a lot of risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. So I encourage you, consult with a professional financial advisor, attorney, tax specialist, your friends and family, whoever you want to talk to before making any kind of investment. Don't take my advice. I'm just here to educate, entertain, and inform you. right? And the views and opinions expressed by myself, the guests, are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of the State of MedTech podcast. So with that being said, let's talk about this really exciting company that I was thrilled to have on. And again, they're kicking off our equity crowdfunding series. So Soren Corporation is a really exciting company. It's a women's health company. So they're a Delaware C corporation, and they're bringing to market a non-drug compatible with therapy effective for both yeast and bacterial GYN infections, right? The CERN device is essentially this very small insertable device. It looks like a little egg, smaller than an egg actually, and it essentially emits low-level microbicidal light in the visible spectrum and is designed to mitigate key pathogens that are associated with these indications while at the same time maintaining critical levels of beneficial lactobacillus in the vagina. The device is designed to address the needs of women for whom drug-based therapies, either over-the-counter or prescription, are neither effective, appropriate, or desired, right? And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have them on the show. One is I love seeing companies that are focusing on women's health. There's, let's, you know, to be frank, there's actually not a lot of them, right? And so it's great to see a company that's focused on a women's health issue. And the other thing is, I personally am a big fan of med tech companies that focus on giving patients better quality care and eliminating pharmaceuticals, right? Probably going to lose any potential pharma sponsor for the show after that statement, but you know, it is what it is. So CERN is currently raising their initial external round via Regulation CF equity crowdfunding through their platform Start Engine, right? And so their direct link is startengine.com/CERN, spelled C-E-R-N dash corporation. That's startengine.com/CERN-corporation. Or you can just check the show notes below. I'll leave a link to there. So their campaign is slated to wrap up on April 27th of, you know, so that's just around the corner. So if you are interested in learning more about them, if you're interested in investing, and I think the minimum investment is only $500, great, you know, so that's very, very doable. So their minimum investment is at $500. Their valuation is at $12 million. And currently they've raised almost $400,000 to date. So if you're interested to invest in them, whether it's $500 or more, go ahead and go to startengine.com/earn-corporation. Or again, check the show notes below. Check them out. I think it's a really cool device. I really like what they're doing. And more importantly, I'm really excited for who they have as their CMO. So their CMO, who joined the show to kind of talk about what drew her into the technology and everything, is Dr. Melanie Santos. So Dr. Santos on LinkedIn describes herself with her headline as a femtech leader pioneering a new therapy in women's health. She is a urogynecological surgeon, and my favorite catchphrase, she is the healer of all wombs. Gotta love that. She's currently the head of women's health for Providence Health System, specifically pelvic health. And she's also the co-founder of Equity and Levity, which is a women in healthcare event. They have a great event that's actually happening here in Southern California in September. And so if you want to learn more about that event and participate and attend it, just go to equityandlevity.com. And last but not least, I want to remind you, if you're a clinician, you can actually unlock a CME credit by listening to this podcast. That's right. So for this episode, you can unlock an AMA PRA Category 1 CME credit. All you got to do is listen to the episode, check the show notes below, and click the link as courtesy of our partners at CMFI, and go take literally 15, 20, 30 seconds, write what you learned from the episode, right? And through that reflection, you can unlock an AMA PRA Category 1 CME credit. So with that being said, let's get into our episode with Dr. Melanie Santos, Chief Medical Officer of CERN Corporation. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm really excited to have my guests on today because, number one, this is a very special episode. This is, from my understanding, I'm almost certain this is our very first women's health episode. And we have a fantastic guest today. That's Dr. Melanie Santos. Dr. Santos, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Omar. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We got a lot of really interesting things to cover, including, you know, pelvic health, women's health, and of course, how you got involved as the chief medical officer with CERN. We want to talk more about that company, the mission and technology, but I want to kind of talk a little bit about you. So for you as a physician, you know, let's start with your backstory. What is your backstory? Where'd you grow up? How did you get into medicine?
Great question. So I actually have a lot of doctors in my family, and my dad tells me the story. He has 10 siblings, grew up in the Philippines, and he actually wanted to be a doctor, but he was deemed not smart enough or not focused enough actually to be a doctor. He has some of his siblings who were allowed to go to medical school. So he was just a lowly chemical engineer, but it was sort of fulfilling his, you know, dreams. I was actually, before I was actually a professional dancer and,
what? We spent like 30 minutes before this episode talking and catching up, and there's all these interesting factoids about you. On top of it, you're a professional dancer.
Yeah. So I was dancing, kind of realized that wouldn't be like a lifelong career, kind of figure things out and said, actually, you know, medicine, you know, the body, I love the body, the mechanics of it and the healthcare. And it just kind of went siphoned back into medicine. I still remember one day I was at rehearsal and I told this choreographer who I really respected and loved. And I said, I'm actually, you know what, I've decided, I think I'm going to go back, finish college and go to medical school. And I remember she said, that's nice too. I'm like, thanks for your support. But made that shift, went into medicine, kind of figured out early I was really interested in healthcare for women and specifically surgery, because with surgery, I love that in just a matter of a few minutes, a few hours, you make a huge change in a woman's life. And so was always kind of focused on the route that I've been on after I started going into medicine with medical school. So then I went to medical school in New York at Albert Einstein. I did my residency at OBGYN at Stanford, close to home. And then did the opposite, went over to the east, to the south in Atlanta, and went to Emory for my fellowship for urogynecology. But I've kind of lived all over the country. And so I knew I wanted to come back to Southern California because, as you know, it's probably the best place to live. And so found my job.
You definitely pay for it down here, though.
you do. But I knew I wanted to come down here. I focused my job search here, got the only private practice position that year for urogyn in Southern California.
Wow.
And I've actually, as some, you know, people talk about switching jobs and moving around and doing different things, I've been at St. Jude since fellowship 2010. So it's a good place. Love it. Have really created a wonderful patient relationship there. I love the patients there. And, you know, other job opportunities have come up at other hospitals, but I love it where I am. And that's where
I've been. That's amazing. That is amazing. You know, for the audience who are new to it. So, you know, for me, and I think this is something we didn't chat about, but I actually, in another life, I was in medical school down in Texas. And then I decided to leave halfway through to go into technology. I don't recommend that to all medical students, because a lot of med students here, they're like, why did you drop? I'm like, look, I was at a very unique situation. But that being said, you know, a lot of people are familiar with gynecology and obstetricians and OBGYN, but urogynecologic physician, can you tell us, what does that mean?
Sure. So we are a subspecialty, and typically you can either be trained in OBGYN, obstetrics and gynecology, or urology, and then you do a specialized fellowship to train for really pelvic health. It used to be called female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery, which was this ridiculously long name. And they finally just changed it back to urogynecology recently.
Way better. Good marketing decision.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's kind of a combination of urology, gynecology, and colorectal surgery, because we take care of the whole pelvis.
Primarily and colorectal surgery.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, for all of us down there, It's where the magic happens. It's the pelvis, it's your core. It's where your bladder and bowel function is. And for many women, especially with having children, things can go awry, surgeries, different medical conditions, things can happen down there. And so women can struggle with problems with the pelvic floor, with prolapse, with bladder and bowel dysfunction, with pain, a lot of different things. And we help them make dramatic changes to help them live their best lives so that they don't have to deal with it anymore.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And just for context, you know, you're a very humble person, especially, you know, I grew up
with a lot of friends who are Filipino, so I'm very familiar with Filipino culture and things. So you are very Filipino. You're very humble, but I'm going to brag for you. For those who have not gone through medical school, you know, in terms of like difficulty, you know, OBGYN is a primary care a residency. Like that's a really difficult residency, just because, you know, you're often, you know, dealing directly with like community, disadvantaged communities, etc. Urology, extremely competitive because a lot of people want to go into a surgical subspecialty. Colorectal surgery, just as difficult. It's very difficult to get in. So the fact that you went into a fellowship that kind of combines all of them is wild. And I can only imagine, like, do you know how many physicians in the US have that title? It has to be less than like 10,000. It's got to be really small.
Actually, over 1,000.
Over 1,000, yeah. So that's essentially like, I think there are probably because we have a lot of people in the ortho and spine world, that's less than spine surgeons. Because I know that in the United States, there's like maybe like 3,000 spine surgeons. So like this is like even more of a, you know, a specialization. Yeah. So that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And so how, the last like 10 years of like women's health and specifically pelvic health, you know, a lot of new technologies have kind of come to market, a lot of new approaches. What would you say that, you know, in the last like couple of decades, what were some of the biggest changes to the profession? Aside from the fact that there's more education and awareness around it. Cause like even me as I'm 36 years old, I remember 10 or 15 years ago, like at least when I was in medical school, we didn't talk about these kind of things.
Yeah. Well, I think you hit it right on the head that awareness has improved. We've really tried to make that something a priority for us, because I cannot tell you, and even currently, I cannot tell you how many patients have come to me saying, oh, you know, it's I've had this for 10 years, but I would even tell my doctors about it, but they told me it was kind of normal. You know, you wet yourself. Well, yeah, you can't control your bladder. Well, you had kids, but you know, that's kind of a normal thing to happen. And they've normalized these things that these women struggle with that can be so extreme where they don't want to leave their house because they're embarrassed because of the problems that they have. And so making people aware that, well, yes, this can happen, but you can change things. I mean, when they realize they could have a 15-minute procedure and have a life change where they no longer have the problems that they're struggling with, it makes them so happy, but also a little frustrated. Why did I live with this for so long? So awareness is huge. And then surgically, things have really advanced, technology and tech has advanced as well. We did have some struggles a few years ago, back in about 2008, 2011, there was the whole mesh issue, right, for pelvic health.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you don't know about urogynecology, people know about mesh in the pelvis and their concerns about that. But it just made people make changes. And, you know, we've made other advancements surgically. And even just, I think one of the most amazing things is some stimulators we use for bladder and bowel control, where you can just kind of like, you know, use a pacemaker to normalize the heart. And there's some spinal stimulators for people with pain. And we have a pelvic stimulator to help control bladder and bowel function. So you put it in a patient, again, minutes to do. They try it first, and then they have this device that makes them normal. I had a patient this week. I put these in all the time, and I had a patient this week who was just crying in the pre-op area with joy because she was so excited to have this done. And she said, I've been struggling with this for 20 years. And then I saw her, I talked to her the next day. She's like, I'm good. She's like, it's fixed within just a few minutes. And so that's what I love, these major technologies that we have that really help normalize women. And it's just so easy, you know, quick fixes for them with little to no downtime.
Mm-hmm.
And amazing.
That's amazing. And it's very emotional for me to hear, because I mean, fortunately my wife did not have those issues, but like, you know, we just had a baby ourselves. And so, you know, she didn't have any complications, but like, you know, there are some things you go through post having a baby, you know, and a lot of people, you know, who are listening to this episode, you probably know a handful of women who probably suffered through this, but they never talked about it. Again, they just said, you know, this is just normal. And it really breaks my heart to hear that there's a lot of women out there who, you know, have things such as like leakage or these kind of things. And, you know, forget being a woman, just being a human being, you know, you want to leave your house a little bit. You know, you want to see other people and have a social life and everything. And when you have that issue, you know, some people are so anxious about it that they just don't end up seeing anybody. So like, I'm not a clinician. I would imagine, I don't know if this is in the literature, that maybe a lot of postpartum depression is actually linked to these kind of things, where it's a byproduct of something like this.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about, just in general, it takes women on average almost 8 years to discuss these problems with their provider.
Oh my, wow. Why is that?
Well, they kind of normalize it. Well, first of all, women take care of everyone else, right? So they're going to put their priorities are their family, their partners, if their partner is sick and taking care of them, their job, et cetera, possibly the normalization of it by their other friends or providers or their own perceptions of it. But they just wait so long to take care of it. And then with pregnancy, again, it's a normalization, right? Well, sure, you just had a baby, so that's kind of normal for you to have some pain down there or to leak or to have these problems down there. You just had a baby come down from out there. But we have actually developed at my hospital, as the director of pelvic health, I've developed the most comprehensive pelvic health program in Southern California. And we have 9 subspecialties and 11 overall practices, including not just, you know, doctors like OBGYN, urogyn, urology, gastroenterology, colorectal surgery, pain management, psychotherapy. We've got pelvic physical therapy, integrative medicine for people who want to do alternative therapies. But we're all working together to help these women. And we have a specific pelvic health and pregnancy program because of that reason. If immediately afterwards, if they're having struggles, if you can fix things with, you know, in little ways to normalize them, you can prevent chronic diseases, chronic problems in the future, and really just get them back to normal. And even sometimes during the pregnancy and even before, if they have things that are concerning, to really optimize things. Because people think, you know, well, women have babies all the time, but it's a pretty dramatic thing to have a baby down there, and it can really cause some changes. But things can often be resolved with small things right at that time, which is one of my favorite components of our program, is helping women during pregnancy and right afterwards.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you know, it's good to hear that, especially, I mean, a lot of women, unless they've had a baby, they probably aren't unaware of these things because it's not talked about, and definitely a lot of men. And I think that, you know, the way that I can empathize with that as a man is that, you know, for men, there's certain things that health-wise we don't have, but like, you know, there's certain things like, let's say, depression or something, where it's kind of like, oh, you just got to suck it up. And so a lot of men don't talk about that. And it's very interesting to hear that women have the same kind of culture where it's like, hey, like, okay, yeah, you just had a baby. Like, of course you're going to have these things. And so things that are considered, oh, this is just normal, are really not. And the reason why I don't think it's normal is because we have modern medicine for a reason, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, so that's really amazing to hear. And I think what's exciting about modern medicine and what, you know, clinicians are like you are doing is removing these things that people have lived with for generations, right? And just think about how many women in the past were prevented from doing really great things, whether it's, you know, the easy thing to think about is like, let's say career, right? But taking career out of it, like, how many women were, let's say, prevented from being, something simple, like being a great mother, right? Because let's say their kids are going to go to some event or they want to be there. They don't feel comfortable go out in public. And then as the stigma is like, oh, that's a bad mother. In reality, that person's dealing with something that they're just anxious about, they're embarrassed about, you know, and that's just scratching the surface, you know?
So many of my young moms who have, you know, little kids, and they're like, I can't run on the soccer field with them. I can't go, you know, jump on the trampoline with them. I can't go to the bouncy house because I'm so embarrassed. I'm nervous. So they just kind of sit on the sidelines. On the other end of things, I think of one of my favorite patients. She had bowel control issues, and we put one of those spinal stimulators in. She wouldn't leave her house. I mean, because she was scared that she might have an accident in public and people would all know, you know, it's not that obvious. It's pretty obvious if that happens. We did this and she would come see me annually and tell me about all her trips. She started traveling the world. She started experiencing her life. You know, she's like, oh, I went to China this year. And then I went to Europe. And then I went back to Australia this year. Like, she's just, and you know, it's shameful. She's, you know, 70 and finally doing these things she always wanted to do. It's really, yeah, it really can. It doesn't seem that bad because it's not, you know, it's not cancer. They're not going to die from this, but it really impacts their life on a day-to-day basis. I remember, you know, every once in a while patients will, you know, be very grateful and, you know, you've changed my life. You're, you know, my favorite person. You don't understand. And I used to be like, but I didn't save your life. It was just a little leakage. But now I, you know, it took a while, but I get it because again, it's, if you had a little mass in your uterus, you may not feel it, right? You don't know it's there. It's something that they find and they're like, oh, we should take that out because we don't know what that is. But the things we deal with, they're dealing with every day, all day. It's right in front of their face. You know, they're always experiencing it. And then to have that flip that switch and then just make it all go away and let them live their lives, they're just astounded. And so
That's amazing. It's
really great to be able to help people with that.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing, you know, I, in my career, you know, I went and worked in software for a little bit and I came back to the med tech industry because it's such a great industry to be in, especially we, you know, on the industry side, we have to always remember, you know, we always think about the patient on the table, but just the kind of impact these devices and technologies and techniques can have on people. And I think, I mean, for me, at least in our family, we're very big on gratitude. And so like a few weeks ago, I did something really stupid. Like most guys listening to this will relate to this. I was in the gym and I was lifting something more than I should. And I'm going to just take a moment and acknowledge that my dad was right. Cause he was telling me I shouldn't be, he was right. I'm just going to own it. And for a whole month, like my back killed me. I couldn't do anything, but those are the moments where I was so grateful. I was like, you know, this is going to get better. I was like, but there are people who live like this their entire life, mm-hmm. you know? And so just having good health just makes such a big difference. So anybody who's listening, if you want to try and relate and empathize with, you know, a woman who just gave birth and is going through these issues, just think about the last time you had some injury that was preventing you from enjoying your life or doing it. Just imagine like that all the time. And I would imagine there's a pain aspect to this, but there's also an embarrassment aspect to this. Cause like, I'm not going to be out and get embarrassed because of my bad back, but if I'm out as a woman and, you know, I wet myself or I have a leakage or something, like it's really, really embarrassing, you know?
Well, I mean, as a man, what if it was happening to you, right? Men have experiences too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? And again, I'm going to get some flack for this, but again, there is a difference between the level of embarrassment. Let's just say as a man, I don't know what I would have to go through to have like leakage, like urinary leakage myself. But if that happened to me, yeah, it'd be like kind of embarrassing and everything. It's, in my opinion, it's not gonna match the embarrassment a woman would feel if she had leakage publicly. No way. Yeah. You know, no way. You know? I know I'm going to get some messages about that, but I don't care. Like I'm taking that stance. Like you can't compare those two levels of embarrassment. One is a lot more painful and worse. Yeah. So that being said, you know, you just became the physician advisor for all of Providence, which is a massive health system, right? Yeah. And you're leading the women's health division on the pelvic health side. Tell us a little bit more about that. Why did Providence want to do that? And how did that come about? Why did you decide to take that on? Because you're doing a lot of things and we'll get into what you're doing with CERN and everything, but just out of curiosity, how did that come about?
Well, yeah. So Providence is amazing. It's one of the top five largest healthcare systems in the country. So we've got multiple hospitals in seven different states. Even in California alone, we have 17 hospitals. And what I've noticed I've been in the executive role in the system for a while, and it's really always been so focused on pregnancy and maternity. And me and a few different people in our group have always wanted to focus more on women's health. You know, pregnancy is a huge, important part of a woman's life, but A, not everyone has a baby. And B, it is a small, small fraction of a woman's whole life, right? It's just a small period of time. You know, for some women it varies, but for someone like me, I had one baby. So this was 10 months of my life, right? But I'm much more than that. And women are living longer. And, you know, women, especially with menopause, women are living to 100 now. We really need to take the best care of these women. And we need to make more of a focus on women's health. And I'm talking about pelvic health, but also just global health too, right? Talking about mental health, talking about cardiac health, bone health, different things as they're living longer. And so many hospital systems are trying to increase their women's health component and including ours. And I want to help with it because I just think it's been needed for so very long. And I'm really excited that they're really making the movements to make that a reality now. And so to be able to help mold that is huge, just to help. I mean, this is going to just help millions of women. So even more so why I want to do it, regardless of the other things I'm doing in my life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some people are built for it. You know, so there's certain people that are built to lead in many capacities. And I think that if you have that gift, you know, whether you believe in God or the universe, you're given a gift. And so finding a way to channel that gift through different organizations, different projects and everything, I think is a fantastic thing. So kind of a good segue into CERN, you know? So CERN is a women's health company that came up with a really interesting device that uses microbicidal UV light to combat vaginitis. What's that?
It's visible light, not UV.
Visible light. Thank you. Yeah. Glad. Thank you for correcting me on that. So it's visible light. So if you tell us, first of all, you know, you're the chief medical officer for CERN. How did that come about? You know, I've spoken with Greg, the founder of a fantastic gentleman. He spoke so highly of you. So I was very excited to talk to you. Tell us that story. Like, how did that all come about?
Well, Greg approached me. He had, you know, started working on this amazing device, started getting people together, and through some of our board of directors who do have some affiliations with Providence, City of Hope, et cetera, you know, he found me and we kind of met and clicked. And when he started, you know, when I started finding about this device, I mean, this is going to affect my practice myself and like so many women, people's practice who help women in general. But it's something that I struggle treating when we treat women with recurrent vaginitis all the time. I mean, I can't tell you how many prescriptions on a daily basis I'm writing for women who have these problems, right?
Can you tell us what's vaginitis for the audience? So this
is an infection in the vagina, which causes burning and discomfort and irritation. And it can happen for a lot of different reasons. Most commonly, it can be things like a yeast infection. Probably a lot of women can relate to that. And then even just overgrowth of the normal bacteria that can be abnormal and cause discomfort. And this can happen a lot of times. So many patients, they say they take antibiotics for something, right? A bladder infection, a lung infection, something that they're doing, a skin infection. And when you take an antibiotic, only about 2% of that actually goes to the site you need. And it really just travels. Because you're taking it orally, it's circulating through your blood. It doesn't matter what part of the body, it just, you only get a fraction of it when it goes to where you want it to go.
So you got to take a lot of antibiotics over a long period of time, right?
You got to take a lot of antibiotics. It can cause resistance. It can cause other problems, right? They always say, a lot of women get a yeast infection whenever they take any sort of an antibiotic. So you have to treat that. And then when you just, you know, we know that there's good and bad bacteria all over the body. Most commonly, people are understanding it in the gut, right? We talk about gut health and probiotics to keep the bacteria in your colon balanced. But we've got bacteria everywhere, the bladder, the vagina, the skin, every surface has some bacteria. And so when you're always treating these infections, it's always causing an abnormal balance, right? It's affecting the balance of the bacteria that can cause problems. And so I, you know, in my practice, just treating all the time. And then it just becomes this cycle and then they get resistance. And then there's the other group of patients who can't take the antibiotics for certain reasons, right? If they're pregnant, they might not be able to take the medications. If they have cancer, immunocompromised, other medical conditions where they can't take it.
And what happens to those patients? What if you can't treat it?
We have some other treatments that just aren't very effective, really just trying to give things to bring balance without addressing the imbalance directly. It's just other treatments we have, boric acid, just really different treatments that kind of try to keep the balance.
And so essentially, sorry to interrupt. So I just want to repeat back. So essentially, when it comes to vaginitis, when you have this kind of infection, aside from the pain, because I remember in medical school, actually, I met with a patient who had a form of vaginitis, and they described it as like, it's uncomfortable, it's itching, they didn't want to go out, it just like, it made them miserable.
Yep. It's just so uncomfortable, so uncomfortable. And to have a device that uses simple light therapy that you can use on your own, you know, it's very simple to use for a woman, and not get medications, not get the negative effects of medications, and treat it and just bring balance to that area. So fixing it and balancing so that we're not causing more problems. It was huge. When Greg brought this to me, I was just like, yes, okay, where do I sign up? Because this, if this really is gonna work, this is gonna be a game changer.
So can you describe the device? You know, what does it look like? How does it work, you know?
So it has an internal structure with a visible light. It looks very much like a tampon. So very simple for women to use. We use these every month for a few days. And you just put the device into the vagina. There's a visible light that is released. And we've done studies to show the timing of how much you would need to use it to A, mitigate the yeast or bacteria vaginosis that you have, and B, not compromise the good bacteria in the vagina, and C, not damage the skin or cause problems. So really, treatment with minimal problems or adverse effects. And it's something that women can use multiple times. So it can avoid medications. It can avoid unnecessary doctor visits. If you have this problem, you can use it, you know, by getting some guidance from your physician remotely. It's an easier way for women to get care, and also provides an avenue for some women who don't usually get care, right? A lot of women don't want to take drugs. They don't want to go see a doctor. They just kind of deal with it and do their
own. Or can't.
Exactly.
Right.
And so to have something that is really so much, gives, provides so much more access to women for care for these problems is amazing. And so
yeah.
For someone like me who takes care of it every day, I was like, sign me up.
And it gives you, and what I love, this is the reason why this show exists, is I love when clinicians are dealing with a problem and the only way to deal with it is to use a lot of medication, which, by the way, I'm not anti-pharma, but it has its place. And so if you have an approach to not use medication, just like I'm not anti-surgery, but if there's something you can use to avoid surgery, do it. And so I'm sure as a physician, you feel so excited because you're given a tool that makes you better at your job, and more importantly, solves the problem with the patient. Because I'm sure as a physician, this is the thing that I try and explain to people who are either in the medical industry, they don't have medical training. It's like, as a physician, this stuff weighs on you. My father is a general surgeon growing up, you know, and so it's not easy to go to work and deal with sick people who are in pain, people who are uncomfortable, all these things. And you come home and you just forget about that. That stuff weighs on you, I'm sure, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So to have that kind of approach and solution is great. I wanted to read off, I'm on CERN's Start Engine website, which I'll leave a link for it in the show notes below for those who are interested. CERN is doing a crowdfunding campaign. And so if you're interested to learn more, you can just Google Start Engine CERN Corp. But I just had this and it just disappeared. Oh, here we go. Here's some of the crazy statistics behind this. So women suffering from vaginosis, so 21.2 million women have it every single year. 3.5 million are classified as symptomatic. And on the yeast infection side, which again, it results in vaginitis, 75% of women have at least one of these episodes during their life. And an episode of a yeast infection, it lasts what on average, like 1 or 2 weeks?
It can. You don't treat it, for sure.
Yeah. So when it comes, so the device I'm looking at it, and again, we'll leave links to it below. It looks like a small, it looks like a tampon, actually. It looks like a really high end tampon, actually.
It's a fancy tampon.
So when it comes to this, a woman comes in suffering from vaginitis, discomfort, itching, pain, all these things. You give them this device and then they do what with it for how long?
So it depends on what we're treating, and we're really focusing our studies. We're going to have some upcoming studies in patients in the next few months, so we can really glean out the optimal timing. But right now we're looking at 20 minutes for 3 nights, and then you can get treatment in regards to bacterial vaginosis.
So 20 minutes a night for 3 nights, and you have a much higher chance, like you'll be done and you'll, that's it?
That's it.
That's amazing compared to,
and say you take some medications or antibiotics, or you're having some problems and it comes back again. Well, you can just use the same device. So it's just something that you're using. Think of it like, on a different end, you know how people use light therapies to whiten their teeth, right? And so they have that.
Oh, yeah.
They just use it all the time. You don't just get a new one. You just use the same one and you just keep using it until it dies, or you need to get, you know, depending on the device, but it's the same thing. It's something reproducible and simple and really not causing harm.
Yeah. And I'm guessing, is, you know, here in the, you know, cause I'm thinking of the business model on the side of this, is this something that, you know, so like there's other, in other areas of medicine, you know, you have like scopes and cameras, like, you know, everybody knows that pill that you swallow, you know, and it, yeah, you know, it takes pictures throughout your gut. So with this device, you know, with the patient, whether it's the patient or the insurance company, they purchase, do they keep the device? Is it reused? Like, you know, what does that look like?
Those specifics are still getting gleaned out, but what we anticipate is, it would be something, inevitably something first prescribed, obviously. And then just like most things happen, then it becomes over the counter after a while so that patients can get it more easily, but, you know, monitored with their provider. We talked about vaginitis and did a great job of talking about the symptoms. The symptoms can be the same regardless of what type of bacteria or fungus is causing the problem. And so sometimes it's hard to know. So if a patient does actually make it to their provider to complain about things and try to get treatment, they get tested, and then we have to test them, you know, follow up on the cultures, figure it out after a few days, and then give them the proper medication. With this, you can just treat because it's the same device that can treat multiple things. So you can do a shorter course. We're anticipating the course will be shorter for bacterial vaginosis versus a little bit longer for yeast. But you can do the treatment, and if you get better, great. And then if not, okay, well, then just do it a little longer for what it would be for yeast. So you can not have to wait for treatment. You can get instant improvement safely and know the parameters of what you need to do, and definitely being done with a physician's guidance. We're talking about telemedicine for this, which is, you know, since the pandemic has really exploded, but a way to, we can still guide them, but they can do things safer, faster, and still be effective without causing collateral damage.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the one thing that's fascinating about this that people forget about, because, you know, when we see new medical technology, we always think about it within the context of the United States. But even within the United States, I mean, here are a couple of issues you have. Let's just say there's a magical pill that cures this, right? Which doesn't exist. You still have to deal with patient compliance, right? And efficacy when it comes to the drug. And with something like this, if it's like 3 nights, 20 minutes, you know, that could be, you know, a nurse practitioner, it could be a physician, it could be a physician's assistant. There's so many, you know, other women health specialists. And something I wanted to point out on the page for those who are not so familiar with women's health, if you leave these kind of infections untreated, this is the kind of things that can, you know, turn into. And again, not just here in the United States, think about in other countries, right? Pelvic inflammatory disease, pregnancy issues and infertility, which, you know, again, because you're having an infection in the vagina, right? There's going to be an issue with pregnancy, pelvic scarring, chronic pain. It's like, so if it gets bad enough and you treat it, you end up with those issues that are going to last for a lifetime. STDs, so gonorrhea and chlamydia can be a cause. And also there's an increased risk of HIV. So left untreated, this can turn into a whole host of things that'll devastate a woman's life.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talked about internationally, you know, when this, Greg brought this to my attention, I actually thought of a patient of mine who's, you know, in the military. I remember she saw me and she was heading off to Afghanistan, and I had to like load her up with some medications because she suffers from recurrent vaginitis and she's not going to have access when she's there. And then it was interesting because we've even had some interest from the military because they know what their female, you know, officers are struggling with. And again, to have something that they can use repetitively while they're away and don't have access to medication. And, you know, as you discussed the symptoms, I mean, how are they going to concentrate and focus on what they're doing and saving the world when they're feeling like not so good?
Yeah.
Right. It affects your brain. It affects your nature. It affects your focus for sure. And so it's huge.
I mean, I had you know, my back was killing me for a month and it was hard for me to do work. Again, yeah. I'm not a woman, but if I had to compare which is worse, vaginitis sounds terrible. Like absolutely terrible. I'll take back pain any day over that.
Can you make a t-shirt?
I'll take back pain over vaginitis, or I'll take back pain over vaginitis every day. Yeah, we should make a t-shirt. Absolutely. I'll get on it. Absolutely. Absolutely. If you invest a certain amount in CERN's crowdfund, we're going to send you the back pain over vaginitis church. And you know what? It could just be as simple as, you know, like the words back pain, and we'll have the, you know, like greater than sign, you know, or no, it'll be the other way around. It'll be like vaginitis is greater. Yeah. Vaginitis pain. Yeah. There we go. We got it. We'll think through that. The graphic designer that we'll think through that. We'll think through that. There's going to be a segment of my audience that didn't listen close enough and are probably going to message me thinking this is a real thing. Where can I get the t-shirts? And then I'm going to have a whole other problem to deal with. You know, a lot of things as a result of being discussed on the show, I had to create, like, you know, other episodes and stuff because people thought I was being serious when in fact I was joking.
Yeah.
So what are, you know, you mentioned doing a study. Do you have enough sites for this? Are you looking for other physicians and sites to recruit in doing the study?
Not at this time. We're going to be doing our early feasibility study this summer. And so we're actually using my site because we've got
fantastic
providers. We already have our list of patients because this is so prevalent. You know, wow. I'm just for the device and the to get all the logistics intact to proceed, but we already have our population. I've had patients, I've told them a little bit about what we've done, and if they're interested, and it's always like, yes, can I please sign up? Absolutely, because you know they're still even now struggling with it. So we are not in need of any providers right now. We will be doing our future studies, and we'll be expanding it, of course. But right now we're good. We already have our site and our patient population is overflowing.
Fantastic. I had a couple more questions for you on CERN, and then I want to kind of wrap up again. I'm very grateful for your time. I know you, considering that you're a CMO, you're the head of pelvic health for Providence, you're doing a lot of things. So I appreciate you spending time with us. So if we, you know, fast forward, let's say 5 or 10 years from now, you know, CERN goes through its regulatory approval, you guys success, and you're well on your way. You've raised a significant amount of money already. You commercialize. What does the world look like 5 or 10 years from now when the CERN device has made the impact that you're hoping it makes? If you can, what does that look like? What does the patient care look like? You know.
I think that's a great question, and I think when we have just another tool in our armamentarium to take care of patients, it's going to increase access for patients and just make our women world healthier and happier. And it'll help with pregnancies. It'll help with a lot of other medical diseases people are struggling with. It's just going to make people better. And we also have talked about already extrapolations of this in other areas. For instance, my next focus is the bladder. To put something into the bladder for recurrent bladder infections. Again, when you can find that sweet spot, right? The light therapy, a simple light therapy, with any treatment, you want to be effective, but minimize collateral damage, meaning adverse effects and other problems that you develop with the technology or the treatment. And so that's the whole point of this. And so when we can extrapolate it to other parts of the body, it'll just make things, it's a safer treatment for people. And causes less problems, and it can just really just make people healthier in general.
That's fantastic. And especially, again, not, you know, this is, we do have a lot of investors listening to the show, so I don't mean to jump over to the business model side, but the one thing that's interesting. So here's my standpoint when it comes to devices. I personally get very excited about medical technology that, number one, truly solves a problem in a new and different way, not just a better way. There's a lot of devices out there that do things incrementally better, but then the healthcare costs, it doesn't make sense. I get a lot of device companies get pissed at me for saying that, but it's just true. Like, it's not enough just to do things a little bit better. It's got to be radically different. So it's a radically different approach. It's more effective, gets rid of, you know, the use of pharmaceutical drugs. So better for the patient, solves the problem. So that checks out the first box. The other really interesting thing that I like is, from a clinical standpoint, of course, a business model standpoint, how it empowers a physician to treat, you know, efficiently a patient. They can give this to a patient. They can do, you know, quick telemedicine calls for three, you know, probably not even three times. They can probably just do a telemedicine call the first time, which the physician can be reimbursed for through insurance, right? And again, what gets me excited about this, especially OBGYNs, you know, OBGYNs are primary care physicians. I'm a big fan of physicians owning their own practices and staying in private practice. I'm gonna lose audience members for doing this. I think private equity has a place in certain things. I don't want private equity running healthcare in America. Don't want it, you know. So I think this gives another option for clinicians to, one, feel empowered where they can actually do something for the patient, but also say, hey, you know what? In treating the patient, in doing this, I know that I can keep my doors open to my business, pay my staff, invest in certain things, and grow. Would you agree with that? Am I off?
You're absolutely right. And it'll free up their clinic time, right? So this is going to really improve and decrease the medical burden, right, of medical dollars. Having to see, you know, recurrent vaginitis, recurrent yeast infections, that's defined by four or more in a year. So, and usually it's a lot more than that. And so to have the patients have to come in multiple times a year, that's, you know, multiple visits that another patient can't come in for, right? They only have a set amount of time.
That's a very good point. It's a very good point.
That burden so that the provider can see other people still managing this patient's problem effectively, but minimize their burden of their time for both of them, right? The patient doesn't have to come in, take time off work. They can manage this much easier. And then the provider then has those 5-10 visits in the clinic opened up for other people with other medical problems that they can take care of.
And, you know, again, I can't help but think of it like this, but like what would be really cool in the future is that, you know, think of your women's health practice, let's say in rural parts of America or like standalone clinics and everything, they have their patient population. Woman gets a yeast infection, right? Goes online, let's say books telemedicine with their doctor. They do it. They're like, hey, I have these issues and everything. Physician or physician's assistant, whoever's, you know, in the clinic is like, you know what? Sounds like that's what a yeast infection is. We're going to send you a testing kit. You know, go ahead and just swab and we're going to test just to confirm. It gets confirmed within 24, 48 hours. The moment it's confirmed, again, software automation sends the CERN device, shows up in a nice package at home. They book another appointment just to do, you know, like a, you know, like to get guided to, on how to do it. They do it. It's done. Patient gets treated. Healthcare system isn't backed up. You save money. And then more importantly, you know, I'm a big fan of telemedicine from the aspect of not everybody needs to go to the doctor's office because it takes a lot of time and resources to do that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that way it opens up the channels because for somebody who's in, I don't know, they might have, let's say, a risk of cancer or something, those patients have a chance to make it to the doctor's office because what people forget is that, you know, you think about, look, I'm a medical professional myself and I've met, you know, physicians in my family. Sometimes I haven't been able to book an appointment with my doctor. And guess what ends up happening? I end up going to the doctor like months later, if ever.
Yeah.
You know, and that happens. I can't think of, you know, imagine how many times this happens to like women who, let's say, are suffering from this issue and they can't make it to the doctor because there's not enough time or, you know, whatever the reason is. And they say, I'm just going to like deal with it. And then they end up with chlamydia, gonorrhea, pelvic inflammatory disease, all these different things.
And yeah, and so there's two points to that. One is that, so if you call and you need to make a doctor's appointment and it's going to take you 2 months to see them, well, that's not happening. And so then they go to the urgent care or the ER, and that is a huge medical burden, the hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, you know, that's cost to go see an emergency situation that could have been taken care of with a primary care, but there just isn't that access. And then the second point is some people don't have a doctor, right? Some of these young, healthy women don't see a doctor, or, you know, they might not have access. But right now there's, you know, what's blowing up is digital health, especially in women's health. There's a lot of platforms where you can just go online, find one of these platforms and get actual virtual care. So they may not have a doctor or someone they can connect to visit, you know, on a personal level, but they actually can do this online and still get access. And that's where I see this working as well, that with these digital platforms to help with women's health, it's going to increase the access for women who might not even have a doctor. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's very, very exciting. Again, for those who are interested to learn more about the company. And again, they're doing a equity crowdfunding campaign. So, you know, if you're a rep or a physician or just a, you know, investor like myself, who's looking for interesting companies to fund, go check out their equity crowdfunding campaign. And of course, I'm going to leave in the show notes your links to follow you. I want to wrap up with one last thing. You have a very interesting organization. We spoke about it. I really like what you guys are doing, called Equity and Levity. And there's reasons why I like it. And I'm very public about this. So I'm just going to say it again for my listeners, is that I don't subscribe to a lot of, let's just put it this way. There's a lot of organizations under the guise of, let's say, equity, right? That I just don't vibe with, because when you look at their mission and everything, it's more focused on having power over certain types of people, villainizing others, all these kind of things. I really like what you guys are doing at Equity and Levity. Can you talk to us a little bit about the mission of the organization? And then you guys have a conference coming up in September, and you mentioned the panel that I kind of got excited about. So please kind of tell us more about the organization. How did you start it? You know, tell us more.
So me and my partner, Kumkum Patel, who's a gastroenterologist at Providence, developed this company really to help promote our fellow women in healthcare. We're both women who are not just physicians, but also doing a lot of other things on the side. And I remember when I went into medicine, and you maybe had the same experience when you were starting training, that I have a lot of doctors in my family, and I had a lot of people telling me, don't go into medicine because it's not
going for the money
for sure.
Don't go into the money. There's other things you can make more money and it's a lot easier. That's why I tell every pre-med, you do the same thing. Make sure you like this.
Yeah, you have to love it because it's a lot of hard work, and it is not for the money. And there's been a lot of struggles in medicine today. They've had a really, especially during the pandemic, there was a huge surge of people in going to early retirement for various reasons. But a lot of people are trying to find different ways. Okay, so you went to 14 years of school and you want to just quit medicine. What else can you do? And so it's about what we want to do is empower women with the tools to just be successful in whatever they want to do in healthcare. So yes, they're usually providers, physicians, but how do you elevate? Like, how do you become an executive in the hospital or in another form of it? How do you get into technology? How do I use my skills to just do what I want to do, translate it into social media, translate it into academics or research, translate it into whatever you want to do? So just bringing that equity to give people those opportunities to elevate to whatever they want to do. But on the other end of that, I think we talked about this before, about women just kind of doing everything. So we're not just physician or whatever other hats you wear, but you're also a mom, a daughter, a spouse, you know, a fur mommy like I am as well, but just different things, a lot of different things that you're doing. So how do you keep that balance? We always talk about the struggle. The question is, can you be successful in your career and also be successful in your home? And a lot of people struggle with that. And so that's the levity component. It's just really giving people tools to optimize self-care, optimize the balance in your life. Remember who's important. Remember that it's the family that's there and how you can do that. You talked a little bit about, we talk about our spouses and our partners who are huge. When you're an executive, you know, a director, a CMO, a founder, a surgical consultant. How can you do that and still run a household? Because, and a lot of that is your partnership with your spouse or your partner of whatever shape or form. And so just finding all of that balance. So we had our inaugural event last year and it was amazing. It was great. And it's becoming an annual thing. We've already gotten people, our sponsors are already calling. We already have our set speakers. And it's meant, it's a regional event. We anticipate about 200 physicians coming, but it's actually a lot of people that are flying in already that we already know about. So it's really expanding. We started it because there was, it was really a niche that we needed. There was a few, there's a few women empowerment for physician organizations in the country, but there was nothing on the West Coast. And so here we are. And it's, we're super excited for our upcoming conference. The keynote speaker is the Surgeon General. We have different people like the CEO of Providence. We've got, you may know Brittany Barreto. She's like,
yeah,
focused. She's speaking about tech. We've got Sunny Smith is runs this Empowering Women's Physicians Life Coach group. It's like the number two top woman run company in the country, like powerhouses talking to us about different things that we can do to optimize our careers. And I'm super excited about it.
That's exciting. When, so what's the date of the event and where is it being hosted?
We are here in Southern California and it is going to be in September, specifically September 23 to 24. And it is down in South Coast Plaza areas at the Westin down there in Costa Mesa.
And for the attendees, this is specifically women clinicians, or is it women in the healthcare industry? Who's the women attendee? Healthcare.
Yeah, so we have anything from physician assistants, nursing physicians. We've got hospital execs that come. We have all these
fantastic, just
women, and a lot of, you know, and I, you know, run across women all the time, and they're like, everyone's sort of in a transition, right? Everyone's looking how to make a change, how to optimize things. And a lot of our attendees are women looking for that change in their career in healthcare in general. And so,
yeah. And I think, you know, for me, I speak to a lot of physicians and I think the mistake sometimes physicians make is they feel stuck in, you know, as a clinician, some of them, a lot of physicians are employees and just culturally, for medicine, we're not used to this. Most, you know, the culture of medicine is to own your own business. And so the idea that I think something like over 50% of physicians are now employed, this is very different, right? Mm-hmm. And so I tell physicians all the time, I'm like, look, don't do something stupid. And again, this is my personal opinion, such as I'm going to be a physician during the day, but then like these random hours, I'm going to go and try and like do real estate investing. So there's like for every one physician who can do that, who's really good at it, everybody else can't do it because you're not going to be able to compete with the tens of thousands of other people who said real estate investing is what I'm going to eat, live and breathe every day. And the couple hours a week you're going to carve out is not going to make sense. So like, I think clinicians figuring out, hey, I'm a clinician. How do I take this and maybe, you know, like what you're doing, like be a physician advisor, be a CMO, all these different things and start expanding their role and their skill set into areas that make sense. So for the audience, I'm going to leave. So first of all, everybody can go check out the website, equityandlevity.com, correct? That's the, you guys have an Instagram handle. I'll leave the links below. And for the women, execs and leaders who are in my industry, the medtech industry, check out this conference. Either I would highly encourage you, like try and see if your company would sponsor them, if they have any more sponsorship spaces. And I'm going to encourage the women who are listening to try and attend this, or if you're a man and you got a spouse, push your wife to go attend this thing, because I think something really magical and special happens when you go to a leadership conference with other people who are like you, in this case, women in the world of healthcare, because you're going to get exposure to how they think, how they've developed their lives, how they balance that with their personal lives, you know. Just the energy alone, I just can't. And I'm so sorry. Like you might end up selling out for the conference, but I'm just gonna I'm gonna put you on the spot. If you guys sell out,
just go to the hotel and negotiate like a larger room. Just, you know, like that's, I'll help you. I'm Middle Eastern. I'm great at negotiations. It's like in my between, look, you're Filipino. I'm Middle Eastern. We will squeeze every ounce out of the hotel. We'll own it.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, look, Dr. Santos, it is such an honor and such a pleasure to have you on. I'm so happy that I had you on for my, I guess this is my inaugural women's health episode. We're going to have more of them. So I was looking for the right one. And so you're the perfect one. And I got to say, damn, I'm good. I'm good at picking guests.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. You're awesome.
Thank you so much. And for those listeners, I just want to remind you again, for the clinicians who are listening, this episode is an episode you can unlock a CME credit. So go ahead and check the link below and click that link. That's courtesy of our partner platform, CMFI. You'll get an AMA PRA Category 1 CME credit. So for that, all you got to do is just write a few sentences of what you learned. You're going to unlock that credit. So with that being said, my name is Omar Khabib. This has been another fantastic episode of The State of MedTech. We'll see you all next time.
Thank you for enjoying another epic episode of The State of MedTech. If you're feeling inspired and love this episode, do us a favor, hit that subscribe button and turn notifications on so you never miss an episode. And be sure to give us 5 stars and write a short review because that helps more people discover this amazing community of ours. If you're a company who has a executive that you'd like to be on the show, or perhaps you want to sponsor one of the episodes, shoot us an email at hello@khatibandco.com. Take care. See you next time.